Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is James Ricks, Senior Project Manager at Romnet. Managing projects in 11 countries, I can't even contemplate the difference and the difficulties with doing that. And the main reason why I say that is because I find that the hardest aspect of doing my job, and I think a lot of people's jobs who are in any kind of management position, is the people. So being in that many different countries, not only dealing with a lot of different people over that time, but also a lot of different cultural barriers as well, I can imagine was incredibly challenging.
Yeah, it certainly is. And often I've said in the past, there are never problems, only people. While to some extent that is always true, you make the point about cultural differences, and that is very very difficult sometimes to deal with. Often in Asia, you end up in a situation where yes can actually mean no. But it's being able to pick up on that during the course of conversations, because people are not wanting to lose face over what they are giving to you. They're wanting to give you a good response every time. So they don't want to upset you by saying no. So if the words maybe crops up during the course of the conversation, that could be a definite no, but I don't want to offend you by saying no. So it's being able to understand that, and also who you are directing your comments to in meetings. Usually the most senior person is the one there that can make the decision, so you will talk with that individual, although they may have brought a football team along to the table.
Right. I can imagine that being, I suppose, awkward at times when you're just talking directly with one person and feel... because I suppose from our culture, we would try and talk to the and address the room.
Yeah, it does become difficult, but after a while, you understand that that's what it's what it boils down to. Even to the point of handing business cards over, I know here in the UK, it's very much a case of you are dealing out a set of cards and you just throw them around the table. In Asia, you will take the card with two hands. You'll make sure that it is facing the correct direction. You will offer it across with two hands. You accept their card in return with two hands. You will look at the card. You'll look at the individual. You'll look at the card as though you are committing the name on the card and the face of the individual together. You'll place it on the desk or the table in front of you. And usually the way you stack the cards is the order of hierarchy within that particular organization. Or for myself, I tend to place them in the order that people sit around the table so I can remember people's names. So that can also be interesting to get to grips with to start off with. But on top of that, what I have found to be a key point in dealing with any other cultures is trying to make sure I learn an expression or two in their language, because that makes people a little bit more comfortable. And having given one or two tender presentations or conference presentations and starting off in a foreign language, it makes me sweat, it makes the audience laugh, but it then brings everybody back down to a certain level, and that enables you to build relationships with people, and that's one of the most important things. I'll give you an example of that, Andy. I was running a large virtual machine migration project for a company that spans the globe. But my team that was doing the migrations was based out in India. Now, every time I would get on the start of the migration calls, I would start that call off with a couple of Tamil expressions just to, you know, give them a laugh. And when I left that particular assignment, several people emailed me back and said, we enjoyed your starting the migration calls off, you know, with the Tamil expressions. It gave us a smile, but also it sort of energized us for the work ahead. So I thought that's always good. It shows that you are humble enough to learn some of their language, cultures, and expressions, and it means that they then become more on your side to make sure that the work actually gets done.
Interesting, yeah. I suppose that, I don't know, I worked in the States, and it's almost even more of an extreme opposite than that. It's just very much down to business, and I kind of learned to kind of handle things in those sort of terms. And then when I came back to the UK, I actually found that people weren't quite as blunt as they were in even in the States. So that was kind of my experience. But that in Asia would have been a whole nother level, you know, of really just taking so much more time. And whether there's a right or wrong way of doing it, I certainly think that the Asian way is certainly probably a more pleasant way to, I suppose, do business in a lot of ways.
It can be, you know, a much more pleasant experience, but at the same time, it can also be somewhat frustrating because you feel you're sometimes going around in circles and not getting to the point. But the difficulty is when you have several different cultures on a conference call and trying to be that interface between these different cultures. Some people will think that blunt comments are killing them inside. But you have to explain, this is just the way that people are. They're not being aggressive. That is just the manner in which they approach things. So you have to often act as a cultural interface as well as managing a project to try and get the best out of people.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And how did internally things go with that regard? Was it very much the same, or was it not too dissimilar to the way we kind of you know, work and collaborate with each other? Or is there still those kind of courtesies from an internal perspective?
Often there can be. When I first went out to Asia, there was very much the culture, as long as the boss is in the office, you stay in the office as well. So it was just trying to break down some cultural barriers. No, people don't have to stay there as long as I am there. Get up and leave, and then other people feel free to leave the office too. But gradually, as time has gone on, people have begun to understand foreign cultures a little bit more. We've become more of a global society, and that has certainly helped break down some of those cultural barriers, if not stereotypes.
So how did you actually first make your way out to Asia in the first place?
On an aeroplane. Sorry, I'm only answering the question that you asked, Andy.
That's true. Well, I suppose, you know, no surprise there. So what was the first project that I can imagine quite a nervy move? It's not the typical, I suppose, Westerner move, is it?
Yes, I think so, because up until my move out to Asia, I'd probably taken three or four airplane flights before then. So, you know, even from that point of view, was somewhat nerve-wracking. However, my wife comes from Southeast Asia, so from that point of view, it was slightly easier. And Singapore is a relatively easy first step into Asia. Often English, or a form of English, is spoken quite commonly there, so you haven't got, you know, quite so many language barriers to deal with. Although the local sort of corruption of English, often called Singlish, does take a little bit of getting used to. But for me, it was a good move. I managed to do things professionally out in Asia that I would not have had the opportunity to do here. What prompted the move, I was made redundant from the organization I worked for here in the UK, and I was offered a job by a relatively small local company out in Singapore. Now, my wife had worked and lived in Singapore most of her adult life, so it was a relatively easy move to make out there. And like I say, it gave me other opportunities. I wouldn't have had the opportunity to sit as expert witness in arbitration hearings if I'd remained in the UK. Going out to Asia, it was an interesting experience to be able to do that.
I do think that as far as growing as a person, and I'm sure as a leader as well, there's been no better learning experience than to have done something like that.
Yeah, it's different to just doing travelling. When you roll up as a tourist in a place, even if you are backpacking, you know you're only there for a relatively short space of time. When you've flown out there and you haven't got a return ticket, that makes you think a little bit more, but you have to just embrace what you find around you. It's no good going out there and expecting that you're going to have, baked beans and a pint of Worthington's or that sort of stuff. You have to adjust your own particular mindset to adapt to the culture that you find. And whether that is, whether you go into the tropics or, another temperate zone, it doesn't really make a great deal of difference. It's how you approach it mentally. And of course, there will be the culture shock bit that comes in to affect you after you've been there about 2 or 3 months. You just have to work your way through that. And you know that this is a real opportunity that not many other people will either get or be able to embrace. And once you've got through that particular point, you find that you do have some fantastic working experiences and opportunities that open up. I went out to Asia as a building surveyor, working for a building surveying company, and from there moved into corporate real estate relocations, and from there working in data centers and managing data center projects, throughout Asia, and speaking at data center conferences. So it was a fantastic opportunity.
I can imagine. And now, obviously, back in the UK, what's the latest project? What is it now? I'm assuming you stayed kind of in the data space, in the analytics space, but on the project side.
Yeah, I'm still running projects. Currently, I have projects in flight in Japan, France, the UK, and in several places across America. So we have a great variety of projects. And it's interesting that when you work in a particular niche market, as the data center industry often is, often the faces stay the same around the conference table, just the business cards change. I found myself on calls recently with clients who in previous lives I either worked with or they were my boss. So it's interesting to get into that scenario and to work with people that you've worked with previously. You have this good working relationship, or you know people that they know, and that helps to move the process along.
Is it a lot of contractors that you guys work with and bring on, or what's the kind of structure of the employees like over there?
Right, well, where I am now with Romanet, everybody is employed by the organization. We have contracts that we work on with data center owner operators worldwide. Often, we will interface with some of their subcontractors, but often it's with our own full-time employees, and where we will provide advice to them on how they can optimize the systems that they are running. And through that optimization, it will produce for them quite a range of savings.
Right, right. Brilliant. It's really interesting stuff. And, you know, now I need to ask as well as obviously the time in Asia that kind of coincided with, you know, technology now and working as a project manager. And, you know, I know remote work is kind of becoming a big thing. You know, I can only imagine the way that data centers and the way they operate have probably changed over time as well with technology. How impactful has that been, and how rapidly have things changed from that perspective because of technology with the work that you've you know, been working through with regards to the data center?
Things have changed immensely. You go back just 10 years. 10 years is a very long time within both the IT space and the data center space. The power density on racks within a data center has grown from, you know, 10 years ago, where you would maybe look 1.5 to 2 kilowatts per rack, where today people are bringing in racks that are drawing 20 kilowatts plus. So from that point of view, you know, there's been a great growth in infrastructure. And what we have found as well is when you increase power within racks, it increases the physical weight of those racks as well. So previously, where floors were strengthened to maybe seven kilonewtons per square meter, you're now looking at racks that may be, you know, weigh up to 20 kilonewtons per square meter. So that has all other implications to the amount of available airflow space in that pressurized underfloor plenum, where you have to put steel in to support the weight of what you have going in there, which adds complexity to the airflow management. So those things have become much more of an issue. Of course, although we have the structural things, the cost of utilities has continued to spiral. And so where data center operators were making 70 or 80% profit several years ago, with the increasing cost in utilities and the demands that customers make upon data center operators, this has meant that they've had to find efficiencies within what they do. Uptime, and by uptime, I'm talking to the time that the data center is in operation, has become the key to a lot of people. Speaking with some data center engineers a couple of weeks ago, they said, well, our mantra is keep the lights on, keep it cold. But at the same time, on the financial side, it needs to be done within certain cost parameters as well, and where they can look at achieving efficiencies and savings in there with maintaining the lights on and keeping it relatively cold has got to be a good thing, because that helps to improve the environment as well.
You know, I can imagine that the scope of talent that you work with and that you manage, but, you know, technically, what type of people are you typically, you know, working with, and, you know, have their roles changed at all with, obviously, the change in technology?
Yeah, I'm actually very, very thrilled to be working with a very talented team of engineers that are producing a lot of the reports on data centers. Primarily, they are mechanical engineers, but they have a very good understanding of electrical engineering. All of them very well qualified, and you know, up to speed with the latest developments within the industry. On the dev side, you know, we have data scientists, we have automation engineers as well as developers, you know, that, you know, maintain our portals and also look at the way that, you know, the data has to be analyzed. So we've developed programs that clean the data, that we can validate the data that we have come in, you know, to 98% of that validity for that data. And sometimes it has to run through several cleaning programs that we have devised to make sure that what we are putting in is not rubbish in, rubbish out, but, you know, very good and high quality data. So that's actually very interesting to work with people. Sometimes they will talk about a lot of these things but I have no idea what they're talking about. I understand all the words individually, but the way they put them together sometimes leaves me standing. But they know what they're talking about. They know what they want to achieve, and they are so fired up to be able to achieve that. It makes coming to work every day a real pleasure and an enjoyment.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, I can imagine. And it's a compelling space to be in as well. You know, you talk about you have data scientists on your team. You know, that's a new job. You know, relatively speaking, that's a brand new job, and you get kind of the pleasure of working with, you know, these individuals who are, I can imagine, are incredibly talented and seeing the things that they're doing. And you know, there's a lot of innovation happening in the data space at the moment, and I'm sure very compelling environment to be working in.
I think not only that, but it's interesting to see people learning as they go along. Now, the data scientists, they may be able to write code in Python to do, you know, a variety of different things for the data that they receive, but they're also beginning to understand what a chiller does, what a water device achieves, where there may be errors in meters, or whether the variable drive on this fan is working correctly or not. And they've grown from just looking at ones and zeros to understanding in some way how the data center operates. On the converse side, I've got engineers that can now sit and write Python script to help with their automation in their processes, and oh, we've got some script to be able to deal with this particular issue. And that's fantastic to see that cross-fertilization of ideas. It's real, you know, internal teamwork, which has really, you know, brought the whole organization. You know, we've just actually all signed up to a whole set of values for the organization, so much so that we've, when I say signed up, we have a poster up on a wall that enumerates these values, and all last night everybody was signing this particular poster to show that we accepted and were happy to work with those values as an organization.
You know, moving forward, continuing to I suppose innovate and you know work with compelling people, what are you hoping that the next few years kind of brings? And you know, what would I suppose success in a loose term, what would that look like to you?
I think that's very interesting, because you know, your success criteria as an individual tends to change as time goes on. When you're relatively young, success is, you know, job, salary, benefits, that sort of thing. But now, when I look at this, for me now, success is looking at how can we reduce the carbon footprint of the organizations that we work with. What can we save environmentally, you know, with these organizations? And I'm now looking at how I collate all that information so that we can publish that on a quarterly and hopefully then monthly basis on what we have reduced on CO2 emissions by the work that we have done, what we have reduced on energy costs with the organizations that we have worked with, because that, you know, now is becoming a very important part. And to me, that is good success, where we can demonstrate, you know, what we have done as an organization to save or help preserve the environment which we have around us.
Fantastic. Well, I can't imagine anyone not thinking that that's a particularly compelling vision for what you hope to achieve. And I think that it's been, you know, really interesting hearing everything that you've had to say. I think you must feel incredibly lucky to have the experiences and then still be working, you know, in such a compelling environment and towards, you know, such a, I suppose, forward-thinking goal. Really, it's really interesting. Thank you so much for taking the time, James.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. Let me just go back to those values again, because I think it's interesting that what we've put together as values, you know, and it's RITE, respect, integrity, teamwork, and then excellence, environment, and enjoyment. We spend a lot of time at work. We probably spend more time with our colleagues in the office than we do with our nearest and dearest at home. So we need to enjoy what we do and have fun doing it. And that's to me, you know, is really important. And it is, you know, a great feeling to come to work every day, to work with people that are enthused and enthusiastic and fired up about what they're doing. And with, you know, some of them, like our data scientist, you know, 100 ideas a minute, you know, seem to spill out when he starts talking and getting involved in something. And that is infectious. So, you know, my advice to anybody is go out and enjoy the work. And when you stop enjoying it, go and do something else.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.